All right, I'm Rich Lini, not Ronaldo, as it's listed on the agenda. So next slide. All right, first, we're going to go over some of the changes that we made from 03 to 04. I'll briefly introduce sort of where we were at 03, the feedback that we got from the mailing list and the last IETF, and basically how we took this into account for 04. And then at the end, we'll talk about some next steps for where we go from here. All right, so for 03 basically represented that it was a merge of a bunch of different proposals. We actually sat down and recognized that there was a lot of commonalities between them. And the merge clause really tried to attempt to see how we can extract these commonalities and put them into a flexible protocol that was usable in different contexts. And we got a bunch of helpful feedback from the last IETF and also the mailing list too. And some of the primary issues that we looked at that we found was that the overall architecture was pretty unclear in what it was trying to do. So in particular, it wasn't really clear why these different proposals could really be taken into a single protocol that really solved all the problems. So, and it, in some sense, what we tried to do when we did the 03 draft is we tried to take these commonalities and put them into really a small number of protocol messages and each message being really flexible. So this time, I'll talk about how we sort of took this and looked back and redid the structure to hopefully take care of that issue. Some of the other things that were identified was that people, there's a dislike of XML encoding. It's too large. The parser is larger than some BitTorrent clients. And also some of the details of the HTTP usage, for example, GET versus POST, and exactly which caching parameters we're going to use. And I'll speak briefly to those at the end, too. So next slide. All right, so one of the major change that we made in 04 was we took a step back and looked at the protocol structure again and tried to sort of split it out into basic services. And each service really represents a set of related operations that are related in their functionality. And the other thing that bringing down into services does is it really helps us identify clearly which things are really required for an Alto server and which things are sort of additional behavior that it might be able to implement that can be optionally used by Alto clients and also optionally provided by Alto servers. One of our goals was we wanted to really make a extremely simple deployment for the basic service. And part of that's reflected in the minimal set of required features that we have. And also, you'll notice as we go through it, this is actually implementable by basically constructing two maps and serving them from a web server as static files. Even though we want to concentrate on or really separate a set of core, basic required features, we still want to retain some flexibility for other deployment scenarios. So people have talked about ranking, and some cases where that might be useful. And in the last presentation, we talked a little about where you might want to get additional information about individual endpoints. So these really illustrate how extensibility and flexibility might need to be taken into account. And what we tried to do is we tried to retain these as sort of optional features that are available in an Alto server. Next slide. All right, so in regards to the XML encoding and details of how we use HTTP, we temporarily tried to remove a bunch of this stuff to really try to focus on the overall structure of the protocol. And once we really get the overall structure right, we can go back and add the details back in. But for now, we really wanted to keep the focus on getting the overall structure right instead of wasting time and effort, going back and adjusting all the details to track the higher level changes. Yes?
Martin, maybe just a hint, if you do this, and you post a new draft, write in list something to the email list saying this beforehand. Maybe okay. That saves a lot of comments when you say, well, we took this out temporarily. Otherwise, people just get confused why the hell they did this.
Understood. So. All right. Next slide, I guess. All right, so this is basically what the new structure looks like. We retain basically two required features. One is the server capability, which illustrates some configuration parameters that the Alto server is going to use, basically which features it supports and which services it supports. And we have the map service. And this has the network map and the cost map. And I'll go over those review of those briefly in the next slide. But we've currently identified three additional services that might be provided. One is a map filtering service, which allows clients to retrieve a subset of the full network and cost maps. And an endpoint property service, which allows you to get individual properties about endpoints. And then a ranking service, which allows you to get individual cost information between endpoints. Next slide. All right, so this is a review of a brief review about the network map and cost map. On the left side of the slide, you see the network map. So the ISP is going to have a bunch of network locations. And a network location is really just either an endpoint or it can be a group of endpoints. And the ISP has the option to define what we call PIDs, which is basically a provider-defined identifier, which indicates a grouping of endpoints. And in the example, you can see that this is just a set of IP prefixes can define what endpoints are contained in the PID. And we also, and the second type of map we have is a cost map. And this is going to indicate basically a generic cost between PIDs, and you'll see later this can be also indicate cost between, you can have a cost between endpoints as well. But in this example, we have PIDs, and it basically exports a matrix of, for each pair of PIDs, what's the cost from the source to the destination. And there's two attributes of a cost map. One is the cost type, which is whether these costs what they actually represent, whether it's basically an abstract routing cost that the ISP computes in some way according to their topology, or whether it actually represents something like air miles or hop count. And the ISP gets to choose which cost types that they support. The second attribute is the cost mode, which indicates how the cost is to be interpreted. So this can be either numerical or it can be ordinal. Okay, yes?
For the cost mode, I understand for the cost type that there might be like multiple choices, but mm-hmm. isn't for the cost mode just enough to say we support numerical values and higher values are better or worse ranking? This would like make implementation and seeing what's working or not much easier, because with numerical you can also express like an ordinal ranking. So it's just like to make implementation easier.
Right. So one of the differences between cost mode and between the numerical and ordinal is that the numerical actually indicates a relative importance. If this is something that isn't needed or isn't desired to be exported, then you don't have to do that. If you want to do, but ordinal is for the ranking purpose. So if you send a list of endpoints, you can basically get the ordered list back.
But this you can do just like returning a sorted list and giving numeric values and saying, let's say the dependence is where in the list you are, and the numeric values just say, well, it's like 1, 5, 100, so okay, 100 is really bad, but 1, 5 is okay.
Right, but if you don't want to give away that relative importance, if the ISP is not going to give away that relative importance, then, that's another use case for ordinal. And again, the ISP doesn't have to do this, or if they really don't want to compute these ordinal rankings, then on their side, then they can let the application do it by using numerical costs. All right, next slide. All right, so this is the server capability. This is meant to just be a simple query to get some basic information about the Alto server and what it supports. So currently we have this as just a simple HTTP GET to with the path as the capability. And this is going to return basically the server name and the services that it supports, and also the different cost metrics that it is able to support. Next slide. Okay, so the map service is going to provide information on a PID level, which based on the provider-defined groupings, and it's going to give the network map and the cost map. So you see we have the two queries. One is for getting the cost map, and then the responses is just going to be a list of the PIDs. And for each PID, it lists the IP prefixes that are defined for that PID. On the cost map side, we have the ISP is going to define a single cost map that it's going to export. And the response is going to include the cost between each pair of PIDs, as well as the type and mode for that cost map. Next slide. Oh, good. All right, so the map filtering service is designed for resource-constrained clients who may not really want to deal with the full maps. And it provides the ability to do some server-side filtering so you can reduce the amount of information that actually gets fed back to the client. So for the network map, the allowed filter is you can just supply a list of PIDs, and the Alto server is going to return the map only for those requested PIDs. For the cost map, you can filter based on, you define an additional cost type or mode. You can define the cost type or mode that's desired. And you can also, and the Alto server also has the option of supporting some constraints. So for example, if the Alto client wished to return only costs that were in a certain range, the Alto server doesn't have to send information that is not inside of that range. And the response is basically this. The Alto client also has the option to supply a list of source and destination endpoints, and the Alto server is going to replies with a cost only between those pairs. Next slide. Oh, yes.
Again, me. Sorry. I don't get how the first step actually saves, because when I ask to filter based on PIDs, I should know them beforehand, isn't it?
So when we get to the endpoint properties service,
Okay. Then
so the endpoint property service allows an endpoint to ask for its PID.
Okay, you learn that about those PIDs, and then you go back with that one.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Otherwise, because otherwise you would have to suck the whole network web.
Yep, agreed.
And then don't save so much.
All right. So now endpoint property service. So this allows Alto clients to look up the properties for individual endpoints. Empirically, you can look up, and the property that we define right now is PID. And so as I replied to Martin, you can the endpoint can query for the PID of a list of endpoints. It can query, and the simple case of queries for its own PID. And in the request, it gives a list of endpoints and a list of properties. Currently, the only property we define is the PID. And the response is going to include the list of endpoints and the value of the property for each. Next. All right. Now, finally, the ranking service. So this is really the extension for providing cost to individual endpoints. And eventually, this might be able to be extended to provide costs for other types of network locations as well. So in this query, it looks a lot like the map filtering service, except we're really doing this based on endpoints too. So the cost type and mode can still be specified, and you can also provide constraints if it's supported by the Alto server. And you supply a list of source and destination endpoints, and the Alto server replies with the cost between each of those individual pairs of endpoints. So right here I have an example of the information that's going to be that is returned by the Alto server. So the Alto server gives you the routing, tells you that that the cost is based on routing cost and it's ordinal, and then for this particular source IP address, the .2 address, it lists the destination endpoints and the cost for each one of those. In these cases, it's ordinal. All right.
Is that?
All right. So one of the questions we want to ask is should this be adopted or open up for discussion is whether this should be adopted as a working group item. And a couple of the items that we've addressed or that we've identified that that can be open for the working group to address are, do we actually want to provide, do we want to talk about different names for some of these services, and also some of the more detailed aspects, such as how we're using HTTP, or exactly how we're going to specify the encodings or the bodies of the messages. But the primary thing we wanted to identify first is whether this protocol structure is really the right way to go, or and how people feel, or whether people generally agree with this.
Jan Zedov, this is getting quite complex right now already with all the, how do you call it, not the required, the optional services. I mean, you just explained them on a non-syntactical level. Mm-hmm. So do you think it should be one document specifying all these things? Or maybe that's a question to the working group and not to you. Do you think it should be a core document with only the required services and then maybe the other ones in a different document? Or do you? I'm just afraid it's going to be a huge, huge document, and that's going to be hard to read if you go down then on a syntactical level of all these things.
Right. Just so I'll give a brief response. In terms of making it clear in terms of the overall architecture, that might be a reasonable way to go. But in terms of specifying, you know, the details of how certain things are encoded, I think a lot of the encodings can be, if it's a matter of specifying how things are encoded, a lot of those things can probably be shared amongst. Because the parser might be is going to be the same on the server on the client. So that stuff can probably be pretty simple. But as far as clarity and separating different functionality, that I think that might be a good thing for the working group to address.
Sorry, are you saying it should be one document, or
from a grammar point of view, for a protocol grammar point of view, I personally don't see how that it might save a lot. But from for separating the document out into pieces of related functionality, that's something that could be open for the working group to discuss. But that's my opinion.
Sure. I mean, I think we'd all like more feedback, not just on how we should organize this as an effort. I mean, that is something that, as this evolves, may change over time. But I mean, I think what we're most interested in this point is if the core idea is here, if the proposal, you know, is where people would like to go with this, and if people really think there are credible alternatives that we should be investigating instead. That's really the working group adoption question. And you know, if the document begins to exceed 700 pages, we can divide it up into smaller documents at that time. And I think where it is now at this stage, I think it may even be premature to look at this from an organizational perspective. There's a lot of TBD still in this. But I think there is probably enough in it today to get a sense of what the direction of it is and for us to really be able to ask the question, is this the right direction? So if people could speak to that at the microphone, I would find that valuable.
Still there, so. So for me now, the whole protocol proposal seems to be much clearer after the slides. When I read the draft, I don't get it, honestly. I think it's not yet the time to say that this draft and the current state is ready to be working group item, because I guess somebody else also has problems in really getting grasp how it's working. And I would say if you're able to put this, what you've presented there, in a better presentation into the draft. So without XML coding and HTTP, I don't care, but more on the structure. Mm-hmm. And at least for my person, I would say, if I'm then able to understand it, I would say, okay, that's probably something to be considered for working group item. But in the current state, I think the draft is too, it's not mature enough. And it's lacking of those details listed here to understand how it's working. And the second thing is, I think we should also flesh out before what Enrico presented a bit on network maps, how stable they are, to discuss this still a bit on the list. And to see if other, maybe mainly the ISPs should come up and state their opinion, if they think a network map is okay, is not okay. And if you get agreement on this and we say a network map is the way forward, then why not doing this? But we need a bit more discussion beforehand, and we need discussion, so not just silence on the list. And I don't know, Comcast is coming, so it's Comcast is good, but I wonder if there's also some other ISPs.
This is Rich. Here we go. I guess I would take the same facts and I would come to a different conclusion. So I agree that the draft definitely needs to be revised, but I think that if we're in general agreement that the draft as it is right now and this set of slides, which the authors are pretty much saying, are the direction. Seem to be a reasonable direction for the working group to go, then I think that this would be a good time to do working group adoption, because it's not the time where we're saying, you know, are we ready to send this to the ISG and get you know, get the IETF to approve it. I think it's, you know, do we think that this is going to lead to that point in which the rest of the IETF is like we're going that it's going to come to the right conclusion. That's my perspective, and I may be wrong, and you know, but that's my perspective.
We just reply on that.
So my understanding is that we are working on drafts, not on slides. Meaning what we have in drafts and it's written up, we can do decision on whether it's going to be a working group item or not. That's my understanding how IETF operates.
So one of the I know you had proposed some ways to revise the introduction to really make some of this clear in terms of, you know, what's the network map, what's the cost map, and that's certainly stuff that we can go through. One of the things that would also be helpful is if there's currently a section, I think it's actually titled Protocol Structure, that talks about, that basically gives this exact picture. So one of the things that would be helpful is if you can suggest some other ways that, if that needs to be revised, then we're more than happy to take that into consideration and make it clear and basically illustrate what we wanted to do on the slides here.
I'm happy to provide.
Wonderful. Thank you.
So, I mean, and just taking, to finish up, this is my last comment on this. You know, I agree. It's all about approving the document and not approving the slides. But if we think that with the direction that the authors are going and with the current state of the document and where the authors are going, if we think it's going in the right direction, then I still think that that's sufficient. I'm thinking about cases where you're even later in the process and you're saying, well, you know, there's one or two sentences I disagree with this, but I still want to send this for approval. And there's a general consensus that, like, the draft is, like, 99% of the way there. We know that there's two sentences wrong. You know, even though the document isn't perfect, we probably would still send it on for IESG approval and say, well, with a note that, hey, we got to change these two sentences. I think backing up to this stage, I think saying, you know, if we know how the document's going to evolve, then it's probably the time to consider adopting it. So I won't say any more because... I hear where you're coming from.
Well, I think that reflecting what Rich Wondi said, I think that what the question to be asked is if this is the right direction, if this reflects what people want to see in the protocol. Of course, the protocol, there are things to be done, and we put them on the slides, but if this becomes a working group item, it doesn't mean it cannot change anymore. I mean, this is just a step in the process. We're going to take into account all the comments and Martin sent comments to the list, and I replied to them based on his question. I thought he actually understood the protocol. So, so I think this is just a step into the process, into the direction of the process. So that's the question I think we need to answer here. Right. If this is the right direction, of course there is work to be done. And if, as John said, if it becomes a 700-page document, we can split this into different services.
Right. So I guess what we'd like to do here is to just get a sense of the room, first of all. If people think from the document and from the presentation today, they have a good enough sense of where this is going to make a decision for working group adoption. So let's do that first. So if we could have a hum of the room for people here who believe, based on the current state of the document and the information we have in the presentation today, if you believe that we have enough information to make a decision about working group adoption today, please hum now. Opposed? Okay. I would call that consensus. It's obviously not unanimity, but it's consensus. So given that, let's take the further hum. If you would like to adopt draft Penno 04 as the document we're going to use going forward, obviously not yet nearly complete, but as our initial working group item that we will all work to refine and get into good shape for the ISG over the next very short period of time. If you would like to adopt this document as working group item at this time, please hum now. Opposed? We will call that consensus for adoption. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you.